Hello and welcome to an all new episode of the Lisa Ann Experience. I am your host, Lisa Ann. I would like to thank you. I would like to extend my gratitude to you for making me a part of your listening experience. I know there are a lot of amazing podcasts out there to choose from. If you're a new listener, you can go back either on my YouTube channel, which is The Real Lisa Ann. You can watch all the previous episodes, or you can go to your listing platform, subscribe, rate, review. It all helps in the world of podcasting. To my return people, my repeat offenders, my friends that are in here with me in the chat when we do the YouTube live premiere, which is every Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern time. I thank all of you for being there this week. You'll probably be solo dolo because I will be in Vegas. It is officially May, which means the only thing that's important is my birthday. I know that sounds silly, especially at 51 years old, but it is a great time to check in with yourself. I've always loved that my birthday is, you know, in the spring. I remember growing up, I get winter clothes for Christmas and summer clothes for my birthday. And so I like the break of it. And it's an excuse for me to get out to host events, to see friends from different coasts. So I'm starting the celebration in Vegas. I'll be there Friday to Monday morning. I come back to the city, but Friday I'm going to just get together with my friends, gather the troops, a nice big dinner, and hopefully not too wild of a night because I have an event on Saturday. Saturday, May 6th, starting at 2 p.m., I will be at the Sapphire Pool for a pool party. And, you know, the funny thing, like, you know, I host, I do all these events, but I'm always dressed. And I realized when I locked in March that we were going to do this event for my birthday outside in a pool, I was like, girl, you need to step up your workouts. You're going to be in a bikini, like, for all the world to see. So I have been killing it at the gym, doing cryo 5 days a week, sauna 7 days a week, everything to fight inflammation, everything to do more cardio, heavier weights. I've got 5 days left to see if I can make any big difference between now and then, but I'm excited about it. So Saturday, big, big party at Sapphire Pool. I hope to see anyone on the West Coast, anyone in Vegas there. You can go to Sapphire Pool LV or Sapphire LV Pool. You'll find it on my social media at The Real Lisa Ann. There's all the information. I'll make sure I have that right for you as it passes off the ticker when we put this onto the YouTube for Friday at 8 p.m. So you all manage this chat well without me. Y'all get to catch up. It's a great community I've built. I'm really proud of the nice select group of people in my YouTube live premieres every Friday. So we've got Vegas this weekend. Then my actually birthday falls on a Tuesday, which, you know what, I'm okay with, you know. Tuesday is great. I can get people together. We do an early dinner. Doesn't stay out to be really late because people do have to work on Wednesday, including myself. So Tuesday we'll do that. And then a big party. The late night event will be Saturday, May 13th at Bounce in New York City. I've been posting all about that as well. Check out Dream Hospitality. That's where you'll be able to look at tickets and tables. And I'll put that link out for you there as well. So a nice like 2 weeks. And then the kind of grand finale of my birthday every year is I go to St. Louis for TMA STL, the morning after show St. Louis that I love the crew. I love them all so much. Remember, I went to Jamaica with them this year. I've been going back to do this charity golf event in May for years. It's just become a tradition. Of course, it's not going to be the same since the passing of our friend Jay, but I know we'll do something very special in his memory that day. And I will be there Wednesday at Maggie O'Brien's. We do a live remote. I love doing live remote radio. It is a ton of fun, especially in a sports bar, an event where you kind of hear all the dishes clanging and everything in the background. It's so fun. You get that instant feedback. We always do a dating game. So we do a couples dating game, and I pick the couple that I get to go to dinner with the following night after the golf tournament. So the golf tournament is Thursday and Friday. We are doing the live remote Wednesday night, which means I will be off from my show on Wednesday. And then we will be doing the dating game Wednesday night. And then I go to Oak and Olive, which is my absolute favorite restaurant in St. Louis. So for me, I get to meet a fabulous new couple. And so, you know, last year, the couple that I met was trying to conceive. I'm taking full credit. They had their baby last week. I feel as if the next time I saw them in December, she was really showing. And I was like, oh, if it's a girl, it must be named Lisa, because I'm pretty certain this happened after our dinner. So I'll get to see them. I just get to meet so many great people. I love the people in St. Louis. That's what keeps me coming back. So I get like three kind of 3 weeks of just like social fun. I will still be working and doing all of my things. I'll be prepping for this big month that I get to announce now. The month of June, I will be doing a best ball draft a day for the entire month. I'm choosing my time slot so I can make sure I cater to everyone in every country and every time zone. And if you don't know what best ball is, you can go to fantrax.com/LisaAnn. Sign up for an account there, and I'm going to walk you through it. I'm going to shoot a ton of really easy-to-follow tutorials about the understanding of best ball. These leagues will be $5 buy-ins. You do have the possibility of winning at the end of the season, which is exciting. And it's just enough to keep everybody invested. Because otherwise, when you do a draft as deep as you draft for best ball, this is fantasy football leagues 2.0 because there's no maintenance, there's no waiver wire, there's no setting your lineups. So you can understand that you got to pay attention to things like bye weeks, but your best scores are tallied each week. And then at the end of the season, there's a winner who had the most points. It's a great way to mock draft for anybody who'd love to get involved with fantasy football and just wants to really get to the underbelly and understand all this, the player depth and why certain players are chosen. I will be doing lives every day when I do these best balls drafts. So I'm either going to do lives on IG, Facebook, on my YouTube channel. So I'm going to mix it up so every platform gets to view it. And that's going to really get everybody involved. And so I am hosting them as kind of a fun way to get us ready for the season. Yes, it seems early, but it's really not because in July, we're going to start planning for our season-long leagues. And if you're a season-long fantasy football commish like I am, a manager, a team, a commish of all the teams, you are going to want to, like me, take your league from where you're hosting it right now. Go over to Fantrax with me. There's so many custom settings. Maybe you don't like a kicker and you want a super flex. Maybe you want bonus points for the tight end. You can customize your leagues on Fantrax to levels that you never expected. And they're open now for business, which means in some platforms, you can't even send out your renewals for your league next year yet. It's not even on their site yet. There's no reason for that. We should be able to be getting the league together on the platform, starting the conversation in a chat, in a group email from the commish. What settings would you like this year? Do you want to do an IDP? Do you want to do a no kicker league? So those are the things that I'll be going through. And June is going to get us ready to make sure that July we're prepping for our season long leagues. And then August, we draft for the month of August and I pull draft orders on Cameo. So on Cameo, I do all these, you know, I do season long leagues draft orders and it's super fun. I've been doing them for years. It just keeps growing and growing and growing. But what's unique is I take all of the names. And so, you know, when you order a Cameo, I then have the access to DM you and ask you questions like, who won the league last year? Who came in last place? What's your loser's prize? What's your winner's prize? All of those things. So we go back and forth. Then I write down the names and I write down the little notes. I cut them up into tiny pieces and I put them inside my fleshlight. And I shake up my fleshlight and I pull them out one at a time and it's a ton of fun. So I'm going to do a promo code for those of you who do move your season-long leagues to Fantrax where you'll get a discount on your Cameo draft order. So I'm tying this all together. May is going to be the big month of just the unveiling of what I've got going with Fantrax. And then June is going to be the month of doing all month on Fantrax. Tons of fun. It's the summer of best ball with Lisa Ann. I hope you're as excited about it as I am. And for those of you who don't play fantasy football, I'm so sorry for that conversation. Hopefully you fast-forwarded through it and it wasn't too much. But here we are. We had quite the rain this past weekend in New York and in the Northeast. And I absolutely enjoyed it. I watched NBA games. I watched movies. I relaxed. I took a total recharge. And it was just a great, perfect, like it was so nasty out that it was like, yeah, this is when Mother Nature reminds us, hey, it's time to enjoy your place. Ease into your couch. Whip up some popcorn. Order delivery food if you want to be wild. Whatever you want to do. But it was really nice to just savor the moment of just like, it's going to be nice. K's flying in. We're going to a Yankees game. We want nice weather. So get all the rain out of the way when we don't need to be out there so we can be out there celebrating it because we've got some cool stuff. Stuff that we want to do that all revolves around being outside, which is kind of a thing. So I want to remind you again, you can go to fantrax.com/LisaAnn and you can take part in the summer of best ball with Lisa Ann. Very much like the summer of love. Very much like the summer of love, or the love that we have for these playoffs that are going on right now. And the fact that if you went to TicketRev.com or you downloaded the TicketRev app, you can see what tickets are available near you. And of course, we need the Knicks to play better. That's all I'm really going to say about that right there. But we do have a guest today. And this guest and I have known each other for a very large portion of my life, more than half of my life. And I really wanted to ask my guest a perspective on me to share with you a little backstory about maybe young Lisa. What was I like when I first got into the business and I was a feistier person in general? Of course, I had not adapted yet to not trolling trolls. There's so many things I wasn't doing, but here we are now. And I got to run into him when I was in Vegas this year for AVN. And it looks like I will probably be going again next year. I had such a great time. We talked a bit. And I found out that he was releasing a book. The book is going to be available for purchase. You can pre-order on Amazon right now. You can just look it up. The book is called Shocking Pink. The release date is May 8th, the day before my birthday. And my guest today is Stuart Canterbury. Today, I am sitting here with a friend that I have known most likely longer than you've known me, for everyone out there listening. But Stuart Canterbury is here with me to talk about his book, which will be released on May 8th. The book is called Shocking Pink. You're going to want to read about it. And you're also going to want to learn about this friendship we've had over time. Stuart, thank you so much for coming on my podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. And it's wonderful to see you. And you always just look more and more beautiful, you know, as we've known each other.
Well, I'm going to tell you a little secret. Yes. It's 89 degrees today in the city, in New York City. And so what that means is when you look at important things you have to do, you must leave and go outside of your apartment. So my last meeting was at 1. My next meeting was at 6:30. And then I have you at 7. So I was like, okay, let me see what my friends are doing. Of course, they're all at an outdoor space having cocktails and hanging out. So now I rush back to do my 6:30. Okay, I'm fine. I get here with you. I'm drinking a coffee, but you're seeing me after celebrating the first kind of day of summer in New York City. And this is what we do. We all go outside and just celebrate nature.
Beautiful. Okay, so perfect timing then also, right?
Perfect timing. So cheers. Stuart, before we talk about your book, I know you're a great storyteller. I've known you'd known me since I was much younger and less mature and maybe less rational. Grown a lot, but do look back at my earlier days and kind of chuckle. Do you have a good Lisa Ann story to share well, with my audience?
You know, you were terrifying. I got to say you were terrifying. You know, we were terrified of you, but I'm used to that too, you know. So, you know, you were kind of iconic already, you know, before we started to do movies together. So I guess we sort of kind of had the clash of the icons at the time, but we always got on great, you know, so I kind of pride myself on, you know, being able to work with people. And we worked very, very well together. The one, you know, I did actually turn down a movie with you. I don't know if you knew that, which was, no, it wasn't about you. It was the Hustler offered me the Sarah Palin project, Who's Nailing Palin.
Are you talking about the original before Jerry T was offered that movie?
I was offered it before Jerry T because I was real close with Hustler doing a lot of stuff. And actually, I was traveling at the time, so it wasn't, but I was a bit leery about the subject matter because Hustler did like to do a lot of political things. And then afterwards, I did do political stuff with them, but that was like one of the early ones politically. And I thought that there would be blowback about that, which there wasn't really. And the movie did very well. But so that was the first possibility. But I knew that I kind of regretted it because I knew you would be fantastic in the part. You know, so it was
It's funny you all of this, Stuart. So let me say the first couple of things are Nina Hartley had come to me way before Hustler came to me and told me, you know, you look like Sarah Palin. You should do this thing. And I said to her, you know, I don't know how I feel about kind of representing someone else's image and likeness. Like, I don't know how I feel about making fun of somebody, right? Then Drew reached out to me, and I have this fondness for Larry Flynt. I love everything that he's done. And rest in peace, we worshiped you. But the fact that I looked at Larry as one of the people that made it possible for someone like myself to have a legal job as a sex worker, as a magazine model, as a feature dancer. And so when it came from him, I felt I can't say no. And so I said yes, but I had the same reluctancy as you. And I'll tell you this, we live in a different time now than we did in 2008, right? Because in 2008, it was very light. It was very fun. I was getting invited to really cool things because people loved it, right? But I would never touch a political piece in the temperature of the world we live in right now.
I don't know. Now it's because I think that the world has just kind of turned, you know, I write about it in the book, actually, that, you know, I don't think that we are responsible for degrading the world anymore, you know, which we were maybe once upon a time, but it's just its own carnival of vulgarity now, with or without pornography.
Yeah, we've kind of taken a back seat, but oh my gosh, that's amazing. And also I will say this, and you know, Larry, you know, we're going to talk about it. I'm sure that when you were offered this project to do Nail and Palin, the budgets were always very low for Hustler. That was one of the things that was always a battle for even me as talent, was I knew what my rate was for some of these internet companies because I was able to understand how much money they were making, but yet I would compromise my rate in a sense, which I knew it probably wasn't necessary, but I still did it because of that legacy. But the money was never as good for the budgets that Hustler put together.
I've got to say that Hustler, they gave me the best budgets that they had, which was me and I guess Axel also. So there was a little bit of jockeying for that. But I got very good budgets from Hustler at the time. But now, you know, I wouldn't even be able to, because I just don't think that it's recoupable in today's market. Is what we did. But we did some, you know, really, you know, and even the one movie that I did for Hustle, which was a parody of Jaws, This Ain't Jaws, the budget was so high, we went into co-production with Adam and Eve on that because it was such a, it was 3D and we had the, I mean, we had the boat and everything and the shark and the whole thing. But the boat was built on a soundstage in Chatsworth, right? And on a green screen, right? And I remember saying to the special effects department, listen, I want this boat to be on the ocean. They said, no, don't worry, the boat will be on the ocean, you know. And we had a lamp which we had on a pulley, you know, on a rope. So it was swinging and we were rocking the boat. And it was like really just very, very, you know, kind of ramshackle the way it was built and all that. I said, you sure this is going to be on the water? And he said, yes. I said, I'm not talking about stylized water. I want real ocean water. And sure enough, when I saw the movie, I couldn't believe it with the seagulls and everything. It was floating. I thought, I can't believe we pulled it off. So it worked very well. But that was a big budget movie for Pasta that did very well for them too. So it was fun.
So Stuart, you know, you say that you are horrified of me. And I want to say
terrified.
And I find that so funny because if you remember when I came out from Pennsylvania, I was in my 20s. I'm this young girl, but growing up in the Northeast and also working in the clubs in the Northeast made me tougher. And I knew who I was when I got in the business. I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to do movies so I could go on the road and feature dance because I loved being in the clubs. I loved doing bookstore signings. I loved the interaction of being a performer. So I wasn't really as focused on the movies, but I knew what I wanted. And I realized that was very misunderstood. And I didn't understand it until I had an agency. And I was managing beautiful, incredibly talented women in the industry. And I would ask them to be more like me. And I would say to them, why isn't anyone afraid of you on set? They should somewhat be afraid of you. You're going to be there on time. You're going to show up with exactly what they need. You're going to do the best photos. You're going to do an incredible scene. But you're not going to lollygag and you're not going to take any shenanigans. So be bold, right? And that's really what I was. And I know that was probably a product of being from the Northeast.
I think so. I mean, you were under contract with Metro, I believe, at the time when you first started, right?
Yes. So that was Kenny Guarino.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. So, you know, which was also a great company to work with. But, you know, I shot you for a few different companies. I don't know if I shot you for Metro, but I know I shot you for Hustler. And I did shoot you for Brazzers, to, you know, much later than that, right? And that was a lot of fun. And we knew each other quite well then. But you mentioned your rate, so I wasn't going to bring it up. But since you mentioned, you know, you had, compared to the other girls who were in the industry, you had a very high rate, right? And I was, you know, a little hesitant about that, you know. And so I said to the production manager, you know, when I have to pay these very high rates to people, then I want you to come in and say to me, it's not your money, okay? Because the studio wanted you and we paid you, right? And so that was the initial thing. But after I'd shot you and I'm writing the check, right? And the production manager comes in and says, remember, it's not your money. I said, it doesn't matter. She's worth every penny. Because you were so professional. And it's like you say, you knew exactly what you wanted, which was very much about how you would appear on screen and how the movie would be, which is, it's not like you're being a diva because you didn't get your coffee or something like that. It was always about the work. And so you were always, you know, extraordinary professional to work with. And I think coming from the Northeast, and I always liked working with performers who had been in strip clubs before, right? Because they were very comfortable with their nudity, right? Very comfortable. And they were there to work. And they understood what hard work was, because let's be honest, a movie is hard work, which is, you know, again, coming back to the book, that's also something I'm trying to explain to people who think that it's just some big wild party, you know, and it's not. It's hard work, and the girls work really hard, as much as the crew, you know?
Everybody works really hard. And when it comes to my rate, you know, I never shot more than 5 or 10 scenes a month. The 10 mm-hmm. was like at a peak for maybe a couple of months, but it's normally 5 because I was on the road every single weekend. And that was a priority to me. And the reason my movies sold was because I was on the road meeting people in person. Like, I understood that from the jump. But the reason I could charge more is because I believed that my product was not competing against too much product that I was putting out. And when I meet performers today who say, well, you know, I shoot about 20 days a month and I don't really want to go on the road because it's a lot of work. And I convince them, like, no, you should be shooting 5 days a month and you should be going out on the road. You should be going to adult bookstores. You should still be meeting the people that move your product and that want your product, because they will be a fan for life. And that was something I delivered to the companies that paid my rate, was them knowing that I was going out there as the best salesperson ever, because I was selling myself.
There's no doubt about that. And I mean, the proof is in the pudding, because they paid the rate. You know, I mean, otherwise they wouldn't have paid it. They paid the rate because they knew that you get what you pay for. You know, so.
But in your book, Shocking Pink, you talk about all of the elements of the industry that are probably very misleading. I mean, everybody gets to see this like 40-minute edited scene online and that's it. But they don't realize somebody is trying to get parking, bringing in equipment, lugging in all of these things, hoping nobody gets stuck in traffic, hoping everybody shows up on time, maybe waiting on one performer's test who waited till last minute. There's a lot that goes on. And I felt, and you say this as well when you talk about in your book, the fact that there's a very different level of people who look at this industry differently that provide a challenge from within itself.
Well, that's what I'm trying to show. You know, first of all, to show that everybody, we're all just, you know, we're human beings, we have families, we have, you know, ups and downs in our lives. And so, and it's not just this kind of symbol that you see on the screen where you kind of expect that the girls wake up in high heels and stilettos in the morning, you know, right? And I know you get that, right? So, yeah. So, but what it does is sort of, it takes you through the whole process, because to me, it's always that the story, the movie is never, ever as interesting as the story behind the movie, right? Any movie. And so it starts from, how did the deal get made in the beginning? I mean, which to me is always the fascinating part. And for me, I always considered that my work was really making the deal. And after that, it was fun. The movie was fun to make the movie. I enjoyed the creative aspect of making the movie always. But the making the deal is always where it's you know, where the action is to me. So it starts with making the deal and then go through everything from the whole pre-production process. How did these people end up in the movie? What was all the drama and problems, you know, connected with production? And then what happens afterwards when you deliver the movie and there's a drama about that too? You know, this is missing, or this wasn't what they wanted, or this what you don't get paid in the end. So how do you deal with all of that? So it's like, what is the day-to-day life of a porn producer? And, you know, it's all coming at you from 1,000 different directions. So that's what I'm trying to convey.
Yeah. And you were one of the very few. There's not a lot of producers, directors that have actually become a brand of themselves. Stuart Canterbury in the industry, everybody knew you got hired. It was like at that time, oh, Suze Randall wants to shoot you for a suit. Oh, Stuart Canterbury is going to direct your movie, produce your movie. Like you were like, oh my gosh, I've made it. You know, these are the names in the industry. So you actually were on the forefront of building a brand, which probably made your deals a lot different than the deals that other people were making that could easily undercut you, but not provide what you could provide by putting a movie together.
I think there's some truth to that. And I mean, also because the kind of movies that I have always made is, you know, kind of story driven and, you know, a little bit more glamorous and a lot of production value, you know, and really, you know, we worked hard and, you know, to get it right like that. So I think, I mean, that sort of came home to me when I'd hear people, you know, they'd be on the set, they'd be on the phone with, you know, with somebody and they would never say, oh, I can't talk. I'm on a movie set. They would always say the same thing. I overheard it. And it kind of came home to me then when they'd say, they wouldn't say I'm on a movie set. They'd say, I can't talk. I'm on a Stuart Canterbury set. You know, so they always had to say that, you know, right? So, yeah. And I know that I
That's a thing. And that's something that people probably on the outside don't understand on the inside. Of course, they know the brand names, the websites where maybe they find content now versus the brand names of the past, the Wickeds, the Metros, all these, you know. But to have that kind of a brand and that kind of a clout before we were even really understanding clout, it meant something. And it meant that your agent, if you had one, I always booked myself, but your agent would tell you, this is a very important shoot. You know, you cannot be late for this shoot. Do not be late for this shoot. You know, and that was always something fascinating on the side for me as an agent, was to watch that different level of protecting of the guard.
Right. And I also knew always that, you know, there's nothing worse than a porn shoot that goes haywire, where there's no control, where it goes out of control, right? That's when you're going to end up there 3-4 in the morning and nothing's been done.
Oh my God.
So I wanted everyone on time and I, you know, have kind of kept a tight fist on everything. But I think they said about me, they said, oh, you hate him in the morning, but you love him at night. Because in the morning, I'm cracking the whip. And then you're going home.
Well, yeah, you should be.
And then you go home.
And then you go home. But, you know, there's something to be said for that level of respect. And that was something that was very impressive for all of us growing up in the young industry to understand. I think it's very different. You knew you were going to get something as a performer that you were really proud of. You were probably going to go back and buy the DVDs to take out on the road, the photos that you love to promote the product. There's a lot of days you go on set and you're like, whatever happens today happens. I'll probably never talk about this again because it's not quality work. And there's something to be involved in quality work that makes a performer feel more excited to be there.
Yeah. And that people get into that and they, you know, I always say that, you know, if I don't care, then nobody cares. But I would say start to show that I cared about what we were doing. And then other people would kind of say, oh yeah, he cares about this. And they would sort of get involved and say, well, why don't we do this? Or let's light it like this. And then people got more and more involved like that. So definitely, yes.
So Stuart, you're releasing your book, Shocking Pink. What else are you doing now? Are you still producing movies?
You know, COVID sort of put the brakes on things, right? So, you know, after, you know, when COVID hit, then I really, you know, and I had been doing stuff with Penthouse and Hustler a lot. And of course, as you know, those budgets kind of came down to a little bit more of a kind of a, you know, more gonzo kind of style stuff, which is really for me not something that I want to do. So I have kind of got more involved in kind of consultancy and just, you know, really deep in the background of the industry. I quite like it for a while, but I will probably shoot some more stuff, but I'm waiting for the right project, something that I want to do, you know, but I'm also kind of enjoying the whole idea of writing at this point, and I like that too.
Well, of course. I mean, you've been sitting in traffic, showing up, managing people, managing teams, and the fact that you said earlier in this conversation that you love the doing of the deals. So it makes sense that you like the consulting because you're also sharing that joy that you felt and the little loops you found, loopholes in deals, and where you made a mistake or maybe where something went wrong, or prepare for this, and sharing that insight must bring you a really great amount of joy.
No, definitely. And it's, you know, I like the business aspect as well as the creative. So I kind of bring the two things together, you know, and I think that's important as a producer, you know, so that you approach deal making from a creative way, but you also approach your creative production side from a business way. Is this going to be marketable? You know, is it going to be cost effective and so on, you know, and how do we get the most bang for the buck, which I've been, you know, very, very good at that over the years.
Where I see the future really going next is I see a lot of, you know, lack of those great storyline movies that we loved. We've fallen deep into the self-created content, OnlyFans, what have you. And now I think the next layer will be almost like OnlyFans adult kind of Netflix style, where people who love, like, I watch a lot of Mark Dorcel because he shoots everything in Europe and I don't know any of the performers. And so I could just be like a civilian watching porno and not know anybody. And so, like, I believe that eventually one of these newer platforms that's coming on the market now, like OnlyFans, will start to hire, just like Netflix and Hulu hire directors and producers to put together projects for them, because we're going to cycle back to that. Everything is such a great cycle, right? We've seen everything go from really professional storyline shoots, like this crazy gonzo, to like really homemade stuff. And now people seem to be going back towards, like, oh, remember those Cinemax movies where there wasn't sex, but there was sex? If you could combine all of those things together, I think that's where the money's going to restore itself for the great producers and directors. Like, I could see Holly Randall having a page and Suze maybe contributing from time to time, but just like that top 10 that, you know, at my age, I still have fans that have followed me since the 90s. And we talk about, when they talk about movies, they talk about who produced and directed. They know what they loved. And it was a whole movie for them. They watched the whole thing. It wasn't just like, oh, I want 7 minutes of this intense scene right now so I could be done with this. It was a thing. And I think we're going to get back to that thing.
Well, eventually, one thing we know for certain is that we're still going to be doing pornography, because, you know, there's definitely not enough pornography in the world. And that's also in the book, is because, you know, there's just an endless demand for it. It's just, you know, it's insatiable, and we can never stop creating it. People, and it's also because it has to always sort of reflect the current vogue. In other words, what is the culture at the time? So if you watch something from the 70s, for example, it's not going to be so titillating, because the hairstyles and the clothing, it's going to throw you off a bit, you know? So you always want something.
And there was no penetration yet.
There was no penetration.
We still weren't showing the penny. Remember when we used to shoot the movies or the magazines or the box covers? They were like, no penny, no penetration, 4 inches away, 3 inches away. That was so difficult.
That's true. You know, I was going to say also, you know, you mentioned Mark Dorcel. I shot for Mark in Paris, right? So
Take me with you next time. Take me with you. I love all of his movies.
No, he's a good producer. So it was a crazy thing that he had taken. He had bought the rights to some of my movies at VCA in those days, right?
Okay, yeah, I remember, right? VCA, yeah.
Which was the flagship of the industry then. And so so then we met, and he really loved my stuff because he was buying from VCA. So we met in Cannes 1 year at the festival. And he said, well, why don't you come and do something? What was crazy, because we're sitting there at the bar together, and I'm thinking, how am I going to pitch this guy? You know, I really would like to do something for him. But what I realized is that, you know, the predator that you are hunting is hunting you, right? Because he's thinking the same thing. And all of a sudden, he just blurts out, you know, why don't you come do a movie for me? And I said, okay. You know? So I had something that I wanted to do in Paris. So I went there and I shot a movie for him in Paris, which was called Streets of Paris in the English one. We shot it in French. I speak French. So we shot the movie in French, which was also interesting to direct in another language like that.
And, you know, when you're shooting in Paris, it doesn't just mean you're going to have French performers. And what I learned when I went overseas to shoot was there may be 6 languages on set that day. And the director could just speak enough to every one of us to be able to communicate with us. And it was so amazing, because I loved the fact that the real communication was during the sex. The sex was no different. There was no language barrier there. It was so pure. And I think that's why I leaned so hard in on European women and the movies over there. It's different. you know, and they're also a lot more, you know, different beautiful shapes and faces and breasts and like all of that. And so Dorcel does all these different series. I watch every single one. And when I go on the road with a guy that I spend time with, we will only book hotels that have Mark Dorcel on, man.
Yeah. They really do put a lot of attention to detail, because I remember, mm-hmm. you know, we talked about the rates before, but the rates of performers for Dorcel movie, I think, were not as high as the budget for costumes.
They make nothing. When I shot for a month in Europe, I came back and kissed the dirty airport floor in Los Angeles. I said, thank God I'm an American porn star and not, but there was still, you know, if you balance out the scales, but they made nothing, and they often didn't know what they were doing or how many scenes they were doing. It was a flat rate for the day. And I was like, but I love doing it.
But all the money went on makeup and wardrobe. That's what they spent a fortune on, because it had the look, you know. So as a director, I wasn't spending the money. Mark was spending the money. So I said, yeah, you know, spend more. I said, and I'd like to have a crane too, right? And rain. But now he says to me, I said, no, because we had a whole hooker alley like lined up, right? That we took the streets. And so I said, it should be raining, right?
I've seen that one, by the way. I've definitely seen that one. Yeah, now that you mentioned the rain, of course.
So he says to me, but he's right. He says, you know, he's thinking how much money he spent on hair and wardrobe.
It's all going to be washed off.
She says, what happens if the scene starts just after the rain's finished? I said, okay. So we went down the pavement, you know, and it was good. But he was right about that one.
He was. He knew. Look, they even would, I remember being there, and they would remove the polish every single day. When the girl sat in the makeup chair, she would have fresh nail polish put on her nails. The way the performers there took care of themselves really made me in awe, and when I came back, I had a totally different outlook on what, you know, the maintenance that they put in, how much they cared to be on set and how patient they were. You know, we're a little bit more impatient here in the US. That's just how we are by nature, but they didn't look at the clock. They were happy to be there all day. And I going there for a month was probably one of the greatest things I could have done midway through during my career, because it gave me a sense of gratitude and then also a different way to conduct myself on set and look back at those women.
There's no doubt about that. You know, that outside of the US, because I've shot all over the world. I shot in South Africa. The first time I shot there, they came to me the first day. They said, can you slow the pace down? Because you've shot like an hour of footage already and we're only at lunch. And I said, yeah, you're killing us. Yeah. I said, well, what do you want? They said, can we have how long is the lunch going to be?
Tea.
You know, so.
Yeah, they want lunch. Then they want tea in 2 hours. Right. They wanted to.
Took an hour and a half for lunch. Everybody was very happy about that. And I slowed down. It was fine for me, you know. But you're right. In Hollywood, that system is you crank it out, bam, 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 bam. You know, and there's a guy there, you know, on a bigger show. There's a guy there with a physical clock, you know, who's saying, okay, you got another 10 minutes here, then you got to be on your next set. You know, so you do that.
And I also enjoyed shooting over there. And I don't know if you experienced this in Paris when you shot for Mark Dorcel, but they all have dinner together every day after
That's
work.
That's nice. That, yeah.
Oh, I loved that. I was like, oh my gosh, even though we would use Google Translate a bit, talk to each other, whatever we could say, but everyone shares dinner. They have a couple of drinks. It's just a beautiful end to how you feel about that day. And when you see that product come out, how you remember that experience for yourself as a performer. Like, everyone thinks about how a fan thinks of it, what they're going to see. But when you see something in an AVN magazine or online, you're like, oh my gosh, I remember that. And we went out to eat this beautiful restaurant and had this fish and fruits and walked around. Like, you remember something different. In America, everybody's like, oh, I got to get my car. I'm going to sit in traffic. I got to leave. Nobody's social.
But that's also exactly one of the nice things that people don't understand about this business, is that there is a kind of a camaraderie, you know, that happens. And when you're sitting down there, you know, after you've all made this movie together, and you know, it's crazy, because who cares if people have been having sex together? That's the last thing that anyone's thinking, just having dinner together. And you know, the rest is just work, right?
Oh, do you know how many times I've done a scene with a guy that I barely knew, and then afterwards we would go have dinner in LA, just kill traffic time together. We would get to know each other. Where are you from? What sports are you into? And you have this, like, we would call it a reverse date, because most people have dinner first, then have sex. So we'd call it a reverse date with a paycheck. So like, we were both winning. The whole thing was winning. But You put together Shocking Pink. When did you start writing this book?
This was pre-COVID. I started writing it. And then, you know, this publisher, Running Wild Press, they're called. They're in LA, and they loved it and picked it up. And, you know, so it's exciting that it's coming out now. And, of course, you saw the cover. It's really vibrant. And of course, I will send you a signed copy. I know I sent you the galleys, but I'll get you a signed copy when it's out. I don't have any yet, but it's coming soon.
Are you going to record an audiobook?
I'm not doing it, but it's already in production. They were asking me about what voice. I did think, you know, because I have a strange accent, so I thought my voice would be kind of interesting, but it's a lot to read. So, yeah.
It is. I just recorded my audiobook for my second book, and I was in a tiny studio soundproof room for pretty much 4 days straight. Yeah, yeah. It is a lot to do. And yeah, the accent, but everyone can get a copy of your book. It's now available for pre-order on Amazon, which would be ready for delivery on May 8th, which is the day before my birthday. So I better get my copy as your birthday present.
I won't put that in there. Yeah.
But Stuart, I hope that our paths can continue to like cross. And I'm so thankful that you came up to me at AVN and said hello at the booth. Like, it was really nice to reconnect.
But wasn't that almost like, I think that is a scene in my book, which I'd written before our encounter. But what happened was that, so there's this line of people there, right? And, you know, because you didn't recognize me, but I almost didn't recognize you because then I had to make sure this is Lisa. And so I came to the front of the line to say hello. And of course, then you didn't, because you had so many people lined up, and you know, so here's some guy cutting the line, and I said, I just wanted to say hello, and you didn't recognize me at first, and then you said, well, yeah, it's nice to meet you, but there's a line of people, which I did cut it. So I said, well, no, but I know you because I'm Stuart. And then you looked at me and you were horrified that you didn't recognize me, but which I totally accept that. But it was funny, and that's how we started talking, and that's how we ended up here.
And I hadn't been to AVN in 10 years. So I reconnected with so many amazing people that I have fond memories of from my past. And Stuart, like, listen, you and I need to go over and visit Mark Dorcel and put some projects together. I will do like wardrobe and styling and have fun with it. But he needs to know how obsessed I am, because it's very difficult when you know everybody in the business to watch scenes and be able to enjoy them like a regular person would just watch scenes.
Right, because you're right. Because if it's people you know that are on the screen, then it takes away the mystique, right?
It also, like, that's my friend. I don't want to watch this. Like, okay. I know her too well. I know him too well. You know, so we'll be doing things together, but I want everybody to go out there and pre-order your copy of Shocking Pink. It's great timing. This is a great spring in the park or summertime read. And Stuart Canterbury, I'm so glad you're no longer horrified of me, and I love you for many years of my life. This is going to be quite the behind-the-scenes story of the industry, as only Stuart Canterbury knows it. And I love the fact that he talked about how much he loved making deals, because we all have our little hitch in our industry that gets us. And I can remember when I started booking my own feature gigs, I was doing so much better than my agents were doing for me previously. And I remember feeling that like rush of like, you know what, I'm going to take the chance, and I'm going to go in with these requests and this rate. Let's just see what happens. You know, I've never flaked on these people. I've always been reliable. I'm a great promoter, all these things. And that art of the deal is a ton of fun. So this is a book you're going to want to order. Stuart Canterbury's book, Shocking Pink, available for you on Amazon now for pre-order, delivery May 8th. I'm excited to be getting my signed copy. Speaking of excited, you want to be more excited, especially in the bedroom, guys. So this is your chance. ultrafarmrx.com/Lisa. Ever feel like your performance just doesn't measure up? Does worrying about it make it worse? Let me let you in on a little secret. Many men use Viagra and Cialis not just to treat ED, but to boost their performance and last longer. Whether you're in front of the camera or behind closed doors, every man can use a little help to last longer. It's never been simpler to get what you need. At ultrafarmrx.com, you can get doctor-trusted treatments 100% confidential online from your phone.
No awkward doctor visits. No waiting in line at the pharmacy. Discreet and confidential, guaranteed. Better performance is just a few clicks away at ultrapharmrx.com.
Check out ultrapharmrx.com/Lisa. Okay, we've got a mailbag here, the moment you've all been waiting for. Let's get to it. If you want to be a part of the mailbag, you can email me, asklisaann@gmail.com. Try not to be creepy. Those emails really don't get read, but I'm sure you have a curious question. Maybe it's about my book. Maybe it's about one of the events that I'm doing. Maybe it's about the sports that I love. Maybe it's about my show every Wednesday night on Better Sports Network from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Who knows what it is, but let's go through what we get here. I always put the questionable ones in the first spot. We know this. This one isn't as questionable as you'd think, but it kind of is. So Mike says, "Hey, Miss Ann, I'm from PA, suburbs of Philadelphia, and I was wondering how I could get into the industry or take you out to dinner. I'm 27, good-looking, Italian, German, hardworking son of a gun. Would love to hear back. Mike." Boy, he says, "I'm wondering how I could get into the industry or take you out to dinner." That's really a choose-your-own-adventure style to go about this asking for favors situation. So I'm going to say no on the date. I don't use my mailbag email to get dates. As a matter of fact, I don't use anything other than meeting someone in person and vibing. And I have to meet them through multiple people. So all in all, I'm not meeting strangers from the internet for dates. So let's just end that. That's there. As it comes to getting into the business, the reason I will always say the same thing, Google it. Do your research. Reach out to agents that you find when you Google. Because as soon, you know, at the same time it took you to ask me, you could Google it. But this is a very unique industry that puts something in your life that is there forever. It changes how people will look at you moving forward, men and women. It changes how you can get a job after a fact. And the reason I'm bringing these things up is if something comes with that much, it affects your family. It's a health risk. There's safety risks involved. If something affects you that much, shouldn't you yourself work for it to be sure that you really want to do it? Do you really want it handed to you on a silver platter and then you haven't thought it through? It took me 2 years of writing to companies in the industry by mail. By mail. And during that 2 years, I had enough time to evaluate that this was the way I was going to go about changing my life. Setting up my life, seeing the world, becoming financially independent. It took 2 years to get my first trip to California set up. So I can't do it for you because nobody did it for me and because I think it's too unique of an industry for you not to want to do the work yourself. And in life, if you want something, you have to work for it. So if this is what you want to do for a living, you need to work for that too, Mike. And also, you should probably assume that I'm not going to go on a date with somebody that's sending me an email. Okay, now. This one says it's from Joseph. Okay, so I just read your post about you sending you an email to ask anything. I'm going to be 48 years old. I've been watching porn since I was 13 years old. I've always wondered what it would be like to sleep with a porn star. I guess the question I have is that, is it much different? Is it much different? Is it everything way better? Is it going to blow my mind? I'm so curious about this. I think I've been asking these questions to myself for the longest time, but I will never get to prove it, which sucks. LOL. Okay. It really troubles me how many people tell me that they've been watching porn since they were 13. And the reason it troubles me is because at 13, there's other things that you should be doing with yourself to develop your brain properly at any gender. So what happens is when you release those hormones, those endorphins and that dopamine, you're fast trapping your own hormones, which we all know is not good. And you're missing out on a valuable time, which teaches you compassion, intimacy, empathy. And from what I see with this obsession, because anything that you start doing that young that you're still doing now, it's an obsession. It's kind of unhealthy. And so it always just bums me out. It pings my heart how many guys say 10 and 13. And I'm like, man, there's so many other things you could have been doing with yourself at 10 and 13. I mean, at 10 and 13, I was learning how to sew and I was baking and I was gardening and I was doing life skills and playing basketball and doing things, but I didn't have the internet. So I guess I can't relate. But to answer this question about sex with a porn star, sex is about a connection. It's not about what somebody does for a living. And when you're watching a porn scene, you have to understand that everything is amplified and you know, everything is louder and everything looks better because of how it's being shot. It's just sex. It's no different than the sex you're having. It's just people that are more experienced to be able to do it for a longer period of time in different positions with better light and awesome cameras. But sex itself, good sex, not sex that you're having on set to create a product, because that's a work, that's a job. Sex is about a connection. So without a connection to somebody, you're only having sex with a porn star to fulfill a fantasy of yours, because in your mind, this is what you've been thinking about since you were 13. But that's not going to be the same balance for the other party. Both people should be equally as willing. Both people should be equally as connected with the other person. That is what makes good sex. When one person wants the other person way more than the other person wants this person back, it's never good sex. Passion has to be both ways. And so if you're just going out and, you know, grabbing a girl off the shelf because you saw her in a movie and you'd like to be with her, well, I'm certain she's not going to feel the same way about you. So you're not going to get that same passion in return. Remember that sex is about intimacy and not someone's label of their career. Okay, we got another one here. Two more to go in the mailbag. Pretty robust, I must say. Okay, I'm 49 years old and starting to date again after 20 years. Where do I start? Are dating apps the way now? Okay. Before you, my friend, hit the dating apps, I think you should get in some casual reps, you know, do some coffees, meet up with friends of yours, tell them that you're interested in dating, see if they know people, get out in social settings. I always mention doing local charity, finding things in your community you can do, be more social and getting little reps. When your friends know you're ready to date, hopefully they can introduce you to somebody or at least take you to their work events where you can meet new people. And from those new people, maybe you meet somebody that you're interested in dating. But beware, because there are a ton of scams on dating apps. And I have read that the most successful scammers target men 40 to 65, 70, mainly because they know they're inexperienced with the internet, mainly because they know that they don't know that there's scams on there. So if you do hit the dating app space, the most important thing you need to do within the first 30 days of speaking to somebody on an app is ask to video chat with them. You need to see that they are the person in the photos. You need to see that the photos are not doctored. You need to see that they're a real person. So take those steps and be prepared when you get on the dating apps. Good luck. All right, we got one more right here. It's a long one. Okay, first time writing in, and I wanted to ask your input about asking someone out. I'm 25, and I wanted to ask a girl out who I work with. It says 25M, so I'm assuming that's 25 male. Wanted to ask a girl out I work with. As far as I know, she isn't with anyone or seeing anyone. I could be wrong, though. I tried one time and she said, maybe next time. I semi-tried again. By that, I asked last minute if she had any plans on the weekend. And she said she had plans with family. So I can't tell if she was trying to say no in a nice way or if I just waited too late in the week to ask and she was busy with family. A few notes to add is this is the first time I asked her out. She said, maybe the next time. She still says hi and we talk when we have time at work. I can't tell if she's just being nice or maybe interested. I felt like if she knew I was interested after the first time I asked her and she wasn't interested, she maybe would not want to talk as much. She recently had a baby, and I'm not sure if she's nervous to say yes, and she might not be sure how I'd feel about it. It doesn't bother me at all. I know some women are having it through IV and not with anyone. I also don't want to put her on the spot and make her feel awkward if she truly isn't interested. Any input is appreciated. Sincerely, long-term fan. I'm going to sum this up with a really good expression. Don't shit where you eat. Yep, I said it. Don't shit where you eat. Do not date in the workplace. A lot of times it could become an HR nightmare. If it doesn't work out, now you have this person. Dating in the workplace is a no-go. So if I were you, I would continue this friendship that you have. Maybe socially one day you'll get out in a different setting and you'll meet some of her friends. But I think she was being nice to you. I think she probably enjoys seeing you at work, but she knows you were interested. And if she wanted to, she would have come back to you and said, hey, I remember you asking me out a while back. I'm free this weekend. I would not push it because a lot of people feel the same way I do about dating at work. It's just not a good idea. It brings your personal life into your work life, and those things should remain very separate so that you don't have things that get messy. So I'm going to say, search elsewhere, but continue to have a robust friendship because this might be the woman that can introduce you to one of her friends that you go out with and you like just as much, if not more. That's the end of the mailbag, but I do forget that there's a great joke on here. First time ever, first time caller, second time listener. We got a joke. It was all on the subject matter. So Joseph, I love that you sent the joke, but an email, the subject matter should have said, this is a joke. And then the subject matter could have been this. Why is it called a driveway if you park in it? We really need to go back to Webster's Dictionary. We need to talk to a lot of people. We need to switch this up in a big way, but it's a very fun fact. Why do we call it a driveway if we park in it? I don't know. But what I do know is I'd like to thank Stuart Canterbury for visiting the show, sharing the behind the scenes of his life as such a well-known director, producer, someone I've known for years who told great stories about me. Check out his new book on Amazon, Shocking Pink. It's available for pre-order now, delivery the day before my birthday, May 8th. Thank you, Stuart, for joining us as well. I'd like to thank my sponsors. You want to go to fantrax.com and join me in the summer of best ball. Okay, it's going to be a great time. Go to fantrax.com/Lisa. And Ticket Rev is taking me and Kay to a Yankees game. We'll be posting photos. It's going to be so fun. Download the app and see what shows and games are available near you. And follow on social media at Ticket Rev. UltraFarmRx.com for those of you who want to get the most out of yourself, whether it's in the bedroom, the boardroom, or the gym, go to ultrafarmrx.com/Lisa. Thank you so much for being a part of my show. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. And here we are in the books, another episode of the Lisa Ann Experience.